Hey, everybody. This is Doug Robertson of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution with another edition of the Southern Fried Soccer Podcast. This is our 1,332nd edition, and I'm making that up because I don't really know how many we've had. But Atlanta United defeated Orlando 2-0 on Sunday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Goals from Saba Lobchenitse and Yurgo Shakamakis were enough. The defense posted its first shutout. It was Brad Guzan's eighth in MLS play against Orlando, the most against that team than any other in the league. It wasn't a great performance by Atlanta United. In fact, it was really, really sloppy. It might have been their worst of the year, in all honesty, considering that the opponent was missing several players. But it was enough, which is something that you might not have been able to say the previous couple of seasons. So now next week, or Saturday, actually, Atlanta United will go to Toronto. It's going to be without six players, including Yurgo Shakamakis, Thiago Almada, Caleb Wiley, and Bartosz Schlisz among the starters. It's going to be a tough match. Toronto is a better team than it appears, but let's go through and recap this match against Orlando. You're going to hear from manager Gonzalo Pineda, Saba Lobchenitse, and Brad Guzan. Y'all sent in lots of fantastic questions. I'm going to get to those. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Doug Robertson AJC or on Facebook at Atlanta United News Now. I hope that you'll consider subscribing to the paper. You can go to ajc.com/start, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that later. And of course, if this is your first time listening to us, please make sure to follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. Now, we didn't get to talk to a whole lot of players last night. Several were trying to catch planes to go to their national team duties this week, which are going to be fascinating to watch. There's Euro qualification matches on the line for Poland, for Greece, for Georgia, which Saba Lobchenitse said he was disappointed to not get called up. I was surprised at that too. But a lot of good matches this week, so hopefully you'll get to watch some soccer other than Atlanta United. But let's get into the audio. On Friday, Gonzalo Pineda told me that he wanted to see the team do everything a little bit better than it did in last week's win against New England. So I wanted to follow up with him and ask, did that happen?
Not necessarily better in some ways, not necessarily better. We need to do a couple things better, especially on the ball. I felt like we were not sharp. We lost too often the ball in areas where we normally don't lose the ball. And then in the final third, we work a lot on the decision making, and it felt like, again, we could have been a little bit more dangerous in the final third in those transition moments or when we break them. Then we, with better decision making, we could have done better. So that we need to watch the film, continue with the process, training, and then trying to improve for the next game. There are a couple of things that we did better, which is the solid defensive block. I felt that it looked much, much better, especially defending inside the box. I think we managed to only conceding one clear chance, and that was Angulo's in the last shot he took in the last minute of the game. So I felt that that was an improvement. And then the mentality. I think it was a game maybe it was more grinding and fighting and competing and never giving up, and the players did well. Clean sheet. So some positives, but yes, the reminder that we need to do better.
We got Saba in the locker room, and I asked him to please go through his first goal, what he saw, how it happened.
Yeah, I just saw the Georgian played amazing. He was fighting with the ball, and he was sucking, so I was like, I knew it. He was giving me the pass, you know. So
right.
I was running there.
It really was a fantastic pass by Yurgo Chakamakis. It was number one to keep the ball when he's getting closed down by two Orlando defenders, shouldered one onto the ground, then hit a Travella. That's a pass with the outside of the foot, perfectly weighted into space that Orlando goalkeeper Pedro Galice could not come and get. Saba Lobchenice got there. He kind of scuffed his shot a little bit, but he did it in such a way, it was almost like a changeup. It fooled Galice into the goal, Saba's first goal of the season. Good performance by him. And his work on defense was outstanding yesterday, too. He was up and down that wing. We don't have the stat pack that MLS uses this year. It stinks, to be honest with you. It's absolutely awful. So we don't get it until like 2 days after the match. But usually it includes like how far they ran. So I don't have that information here in front of me just yet. I wish the league would simply allow us to use Opta, which has all sorts of cool stats. But for whatever reason, I'm assuming money, they don't. But here's Saba on the importance of him putting defensive pressure on opponents.
Honestly, I feel like I improve my defensive skills, and I know I'm helping with the team and with the Brooks especially, and our midfield, but still it's not fantastic, so I have to do better, you know, much better. You know?
And I wanted to follow up with Saba on not being called up to the Georgia national team. As I said, that surprised me. It's a huge gain for Georgia. Here's Saba's response.
So disappointed about that, you know, like I feel really, really bad about that, because this is the life game, you know, and because if we will win, we go championship, European championship. So, but yeah, it is what it is, you know, like what can I do? You know, like I do my job here and that's it.
Brad was hustling to try to get home. It's a school night. He wanted to see his kids before they got in bed. So he spent a couple of minutes with us. Thank you to Brad. Here he is talking about the shutout.
Guys did a fantastic job today. There's obviously areas we need to continue to improve on in terms of we're just sloppy with the ball. We're sloppy with the ball. So, we always look back and always there's always areas for us to get better in, and tonight's no different.
And here's Brad talking about if the win was a result of good play, good luck, or some bit of both.
I think it's a bit of both. I think, you know, listen, we talk about competing. We talk about being willing to do some dirty running and put in real work. And the guys did that. Again, I don't know if we were, you know, certainly we were tired in the second half. And we still had to get up and down. You know, they obviously have talented players in terms of their wingers and their front attacking players. Duncan McGuire, relentless in terms of his work rate and what he brings to their team. So we had to be up for that challenge. And so from a competitive standpoint, I thought we were excellent. We were really good. But overall, we need to be better.
Again, that was Brad's first shutout this year. It was the first shutout for Atlanta United since defeating Nashville last August. They came close against New England last week. They allowed that late goal to Carlos Heel, who's, you know, a fantastic player. Orlando's Duncan McGuire, I've been skeptical of him being a U.S. men's national team player this early in his career. I'm still a little bit skeptical, but his work rate is outstanding. The guy never quit in that game yesterday, caused Atlanta United several problems, and I just wanted to say that. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We are excited to announce a great deal for a Greater Atlanta. For a limited time, subscribe and you'll get digital access to the AJC for just $1.99 per week for life. As long as you keep your subscription, you have access to the substance and soul of the South, including breaking news and in-depth investigations, food, sports, business, and more from AJC.com every day for the rest of your life. Subscribe now by going to ajc.com/start. That's ajc.com/start to take advantage of the South's biggest deal. This is for new subscribers only. I hope you'll consider. The Braves are about to start. A lot of hope for the Braves this year. Justin kills it with the Braves coverage. Gabe kills it when he's there helping out. Sarah kills it with the video. We got the Falcons about to open their practices, their spring mini practices, whatever, the mini camps, with D-Led, Georgia Tech, with Chad, Georgia, of course, with Chip, Georgia State, Kennesaw State with Stan, the Hawks with Lauren, all the local news, ajc.com/start, $1.99 per week. Please consider subscribing. Make it an Easter gift to someone. There you go. On to the mailbag. Scott says, a shutout win is a win, but it's shocking how easily they gave up the ball in the middle third. Was it just the middle third? They gave up the ball in their own defensive third, too. You heard Pineda, you heard Guzan talk about they were sloppy. No one was quite sure why. I don't know if players were looking ahead to international duty. I don't know if players were looking a little bit past Orlando, which was missing two starting midfielders last night. I don't know if Atlanta United was a little bit confident after its performance against New England. That's, you know, been a problem for this team is in the past, I think sometimes it thinks it's better than its results would indicate. And sometimes it plays that way, in my opinion, a little bit arrogant maybe, but they did the work last night and got the win. That's a good sign. They got to be much, much cleaner. You know, I do need to point out that Orlando has still yet to win a game. New England in Major League Soccer still yet to win a game. That's the first two opponents they've beaten. Columbus, of course, is the MLS Cup champs, and Atlanta United got played off the field in the first half. It did bounce back in the second half and played much better. But it needs a quality opponent, you know, an opponent similar to it. Let's see how it really is playing. Toronto was one of the worst teams in the league, one of the worst teams in MLS history last year. Doing better this year. Dropped a late goal to NYCFC to lose on Saturday. But it's got two players that are difference makers, and Insigne and Bernardeschi. So let's see how Atlanta United does on Saturday. I will be there. I'll be in lovely Canada providing coverage. So I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Doug Robertson AJC. On to Greg, who says, I enjoy the pods this year and really like the interview with Jake Zivin. That appeared on Friday. If you missed it, again, go to Apple or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and you can find that one. Jake's a good guy. It was good catching up with him in the press box before the game, and Taylor Trollman. We were all kind of standing around watching the end of the Players' Championship. Feel awful for Wyndham Clark. He did everything he could to catch Scottie Scheffler and the ball. I don't think I've ever seen a putt lip out to cost a guy a chance to at least tie for a championship. Anyway, y'all aren't here to hear me talk about golf. Greg continues, it's great to get a national perspective every so often. Question, albeit a small sample size, but which player is my biggest surprise and which is the biggest disappointment or perhaps someone who could take their game to a higher level? He says, for him, he's pleasantly surprised with Derek Williams. Thought he was more of a depth piece when he signed, but he's extremely solid. And what he and Gregerson lack in athletic ability, they make up for in intelligence. Honorable mention, Brad Guzan. Okay, let's get to that first. I agree with you on Derek Williams. Yeah, I thought he was going to be a depth piece too, but it's clear that Pineda likes his communication ability. He is his reading of the game. You don't see him get caught out of position too often. And that way he's a little bit Parkhursty, I guess. I think Steen is quite the athlete, actually. He just hasn't really had a chance to show it yet. He hasn't been tested. There was one time that Orlando put a ball over the top, and Steen easily got there and cut down the angle on the player. He talked about on Friday he wants to show that he could carry the ball forward. He just hasn't had any need to do that yet. So, yeah, I agree with you on Derek. The biggest disappointment, he says, does Greg, is Jhonde Silva to have a greater impact. Perhaps I'm missing something. No, I tweeted this last night. Jhonde, to me, he needs to play a little bit more simply. And y'all have heard me say that in the past about some guys like Barco and Pitti and Marcelino Moreno. And I'm not picking on Argentinian players. They just all happen to be from Argentina because that's where the team goes to sign a lot of players. I think he dribbles just a little too much sometimes, not all the time, sometimes. Before the season, you know, I was asking people, who do you think might be the first starter from this group to maybe not start a game, to give him a rest or whatever reason, and my pick was Jhonde. because I think sometimes he does try to do too much. And I think that was the case several times last night. Now, having said that, I think he's an immensely skilled player. I think he's a very smart player. I think he just maybe, I don't know, just needs to relax a little bit and just show he doesn't have to be fancy on the ball. Just pass and move, and he's more than capable of doing that. On to DeBoonful, friend of the podcast, said it looks like the keeper competition is benefiting Brad's game. He looked confident and got way down deep a few times into places I didn't see him able to get last year. Nice job. Well, first off, I don't think it's the keeper competition. I think he's 2 years removed from having the largest tendon in the body split in half and repaired. It's that simple. I mean, he came back last year because he's a freaking machine, as did Miles, and they wanted to play, and I think they would agree now. They weren't 100% last year, but they were good enough to contribute to the team and try to help the team win. And this year, fully healthy, fully confident, you don't have to think about things anymore. And he's got a better defense in front of him this year than he had last year. Bartosz Szlich had a fantastic game last night. He had a couple of turnovers, but overall had a fantastic game. And when you're not worried about what's happening in front of you, you're trusting your teammates that they're going to read the game as you read it and cut down the angles and push teams out to the flanks, it's really a whole lot easier. DeBoonful continues, so I wrote to you last year about my annoyance of how much our defense played with the ball inside the 18 instead of just clearing danger. That appears to be one part of our new center back pairing that are unwilling to take that risk. They love the full boots and driving clearances out of defensive areas, especially ones that put pressure on opponents' defense. I won't say they are better yet, but they seem to be willing to just clear the ball out of danger more. Yeah, you saw that a few times. And I don't think that Pineda was telling the guys, hey, just keep messing around with the ball in the 18 last year instead of just booting it. But these guys have more experience. Well, they don't have more. I shouldn't say they have more experience. I think they just recognize dangers maybe a little bit quicker. And so, yeah, they don't mess around with the ball. DeBoonful continues, my big concern for our defense is how much Orlando was able to live cutting into the back line at our goalposts. Basically, the Man City zone, as it's referred to in the EPL. Orlando made at least 24 successful angled dribbles direct to the backline post, creating the option for extremely high percentage near post shot, cross, or cutback opportunities. Did I catch this? With one watch on a 13-inch screen, I don't have a good read on why we weren't able to cut them off and driving them out toward the corner flag for a hopeful cross or out of bounds on the backline. Was it our formation, winger play, the center back pairing not coming out? But yeah, Orlando on another day has several goals with this positive, dangerous type of play. Well, I mean, Atlanta's trying to push them out to the flanks. They want them out there instead of in the middle of the field. But the other team is trying to win too. So if you keep pushing them out to the flanks, eventually they run out of room and they have to cut up the inline. Offensive teams want to get to that inline. Atlanta United calls that the primary assist zone. And you're right, you can get a near post runner, a center runner, a back post runner, and it's the job of the fullbacks or the wingers, whoever's marking that player on the inline, to block that cross or make it such that it goes over all three players, and Atlanta United's fullbacks and wingers did a good job of that last night. There were three instances, I think, where the ball went all the way across the mouth of the goal and nobody touched it. You know, it's dangerous for that ball, but it's also a good sign that the Orlando players were getting blocked off that they couldn't get those runs made to get a touch on that ball. It wasn't a good performance by Atlanta United. The low block was good. The counters were decent, but Atlanta United could play better, but it did get the win. John says, hi, Doug. Watching from the mezzanine level these first two games, it seems like the ball moves just a touch slower on the new turf than before. Multiple passes that were a tad shallow all night. I think you said Pineda even mentioned adjusting to the turf after the first game. Yeah, some of the players have talked about it too. They said it's new turf, so it's a little bit stiff. The blades of grass are. So the ball can sometimes get stuck. Players can sometimes trip a little bit. You saw some of that last night. You saw some of it in the first game too. But it'll soften up as it sits and as they water it and roll it and things. John continues, one, does the team just not ever get to practice on the turf? No, that's inaccurate. They practiced twice there last week. They have, I think it's two turf fields at the training facility that they can practice on too. He says it seems like that's a missed opportunity. If not, and if Given the team's frequent road struggles on grass in years past, if this new turf better mimics grass, might this be a good thing in the long run? No, it's just it's a little bit stiff because it's new. And the team practices on turf grass at the training facility 99% of the time. So playing on grass is not why they struggle on the road. Tim, friend of the podcast, says, I have a stat for you. 2023, home wins against teams ahead of us in the standing in 18 games, 2. 2024, home wins against teams ahead of us in the standings, I assume this was 2023, in 2 games, 2. All right. Let's see how it goes by the All-Star break. Let's see how it is. Derek, friend of the podcast, says, as always, love the podcast, never miss an episode. A little criticism. Why can't you just sit in the same seat every time in the post-game press conference? Gonzalo has enough to worry about. Help us out. So last night, the only flaw in the design of Mercedes-Benz Stadium is once you get out of the press box, you cannot go directly to the interview room. You have to wait in this area near the, I think it's the Delta Club, for the players to get off the field and they open up the ropes and then we can cut across to the other side where the interview room is. Usually I'm probably the first person in the interview room and I always take the same seat I have for 7 years now. And last night, a photographer and somebody from a radio station, I don't know how they got in that room first, were in my seat. Or the seat that I usually, it's not my seat, the seat that I usually occupy. So when Pineda walks in and he sees me in a different seat, he noticed it. Frankly, he didn't care. He's tried to get me to move around a couple of times because I told him that Tata always liked me to sat in the same seat. And he's like, well, you know, I'm not Tata. It doesn't bother me if you move around. But yeah, since 2017, I usually stand, if you're facing the guys being interviewed, immediately to their left. During the training session, post interviews, and in the games, I usually sit on the first seat, again to their left, on the second row. But anyway, Matt says, "Hope you're enjoying another season. What's up with Almada? He didn't look sharp at all. He tried to dribble 3 defenders all night, multiple sloppy passes, a dumb yellow card. All in all, I don't think he did much, and maybe even deserved to sit and watch." Was it a bad night or is something else up? For the record, we all have rough days. Playing professional soccer is very difficult, and we all want him to have a great season. Yeah, Almada struggled a bit last night. I don't know why. To me, he was a little too Barco-y, and he would get the ball, stop, stand over the ball, then try to dribble past a couple of guys. Pineda said that it was because he didn't have any options to pass in the second half. Teammates were getting tired, not making runs, and so he was just trying to make something happen. He thought defensively he played well. I would agree with that. Yeah, I think it was just a bad night. He tried to make a couple of passes that were a little too perfect. He almost had a horrible giveaway in the 18. I think Brooks Lennon saved him from a turnover at the top of the box when he tried to hit one of those kind of blind switches to the other side of the field. Everybody has a bad night. I wouldn't read anything into it. I wouldn't read too much. You know, I've seen people on Twitter saying he wants out. He's trying to play to get out. It's not that he actively wants out. He has professional goals, as do most of us. And so he wants to go to Europe, but that doesn't mean he's going to play poorly or whatever. That makes no sense whatsoever. Coffee sip. Adam, friend of the podcast, says, it's very early, but I'm liking the returns on Sleece Williams at Gregerson. Williams is an especially talkative defensive leader, which I greatly appreciate. And Bartok showed solid work rate managing the defensive midfield. If this is a sign of things to come under Lagerwey, it's not just Lagerwey. Lagerwey provides the direction. Carlos finds the players. Adam says that I'm definitely on board. He continues, Almada and Muyamba had comparably rough matches. That the team did well in spite of that is a good sign, but were they simply trying too hard to force some passes or simply an off night? I think it was an off night. I thought Tristan defensively played well, but yeah, he had a couple of bad giveaways where he just, I don't know if teammates weren't telling him you got a man behind you catching you or what, but he had a couple of giveaways, a couple of bad passes. It just happens. And I don't think it's a coincidence that both Almada and Muyamba had rough nights because they play very close to each other. Maybe one affects the other. David says, thanks for all your great coverage, Doug. Much like last year's playoffs, today seemed like once Muyamba got that yellow for the sloppy tackle, he just seemed to continue to be reckless and teeter on the yellow. Does Pineda ever express concern, nervousness over his playing style when he has these type of games where he plays too on the edge? No, I think if anything, Pineda's probably happy about it, because you could argue that the past couple of years, Atlanta United did not have that player. They didn't have somebody who was going to really put in a rough tackle, really try to play on the edge, really try to show the opponent, look, you're not just going to get through this without something happening to you, a bruise, a knock, a kick. So I think he, you know, if it continues, then yeah, he might be a little nervous. But for right now, I think he's probably fine with it. Kyle says, it appears that I caused distress to Gonzalo Pineda by not sitting in my usual seat. What do you have to say to the fans of Atlanta United? My fanny and my seat apologize again. Somebody else was there before me. Everybody has a right to sit wherever they want. How do I plan on avoiding the superstition in the future? Yeah, I'm not worried about it. Evan says, after the match against Orlando, would I like to revise my statement about not noticing the replacement referees in this first few games? I would not. Y'all want to get mad at the referees? Be mad at the referees. I thought for the most part he called it a decent game. You know, Caleb getting pulled down. You see players get pulled down all the freaking time. Especially at full speed sprints, you see guys with both hands on shoulders trying to pull them back. And he only gets a yellow card, so I wasn't worried about that last night, if that's what you're talking about. One person on Twitter was especially vocal about the referees wearing Orlando and purple shirts underneath. It all evens out. And frankly, you know, I didn't think this game was any worse than any of the games we've seen previously with PRSA guys. Doug, not me, says, Saba must have sipped some of your coffee before the Orlando match. He had tons of energy. He surely did. Thought he played well. Question, Gigi has turned into an intimidating goal scorer. Is he at Joseph level yet as far as the opposing team's thinking about him? Taylor Twellman called him the perfect villain. Do I agree? I don't know if he's turned into Joseph yet. I mean, teams have to game plan for him. You typically game plan for the striker. Anybody that is the main goal scorer, you try to neutralize or eliminate. So, yes, teams have to be planning for Gigi. He's getting more involved in the attack. He's getting better at holding up the ball and not giving it away. You know, he takes a lot of hits as the holdup guy, particularly when Atlanta United is trying to break pressure like they were against Orlando last night, playing with his back to the goal, holding off a center back. He's making smart decisions with his passes. He's really finding a confidence level that can carry this team. Now, let's see. I want to see how he does. I hope he gets a start for Greece this week. I'd like to see him play against international levels. And they're going to play Kazakhstan, and the winner goes ahead and plays, has one more game. If they win, they qualify for the European Championships, which is awesome. And now we get to our questions of the week, and they are from another Tim. After the match, Coach Pineda said it was mostly the bad decisions that they needed to work through. How will they train that? Is it just reviewing the film and talking it out, or does it equate to certain drills on the training pitch as well? I'd love to hear the specifics around what was a bad decision and how they follow up on that from film to the training ground. I know that would be some deep cut reporting, but it's neato to mull over. So it's a combination. It'll be watching film. It'll be talking. They work on short-sighted, small-sighted games all the time where decision-making is paramount, finding the open guy, executing the pass. They work on that all the time. I think last night was just one of those nights where they just, you know, just having a bad night. As far as the situation, so after Saba's goal, there was a situation where Saba got the ball probably 35 yards, 40 yards from Atlanta United's goal. He had a pass over the top. Almada went into fifth gear, got to the ball, and instead of taking a shot, he kind of waited for a second for Gigi to catch up, and then he tried to play it over to Gigi, and the ball got cut out by an Orlando defender. I was a little surprised Almada just didn't go ahead and rip one. He had cut back onto his left foot, didn't want to take that shot, then tried to make the pass. I don't know why he didn't want to shoot with his left, but that's an example of what I think Pineda would describe as a bad decision in the final third. Tim continues, coffee sip. Don't mind if I do. He says, if every Andy Griffith episode I watch was the same, which episode would you be okay with seeing every other time? I'm quite fond of Three Wishes for Opie, The Guitar Player, or anything with the Darlins or Ernest T. Bass. I always love the Darlins. Briscoe Darlin and the boys are to me some of the most memorable characters in TV history. For those who have not watched Andy Griffith, Briscoe T. Darlin is kind of a mountain guy. He comes down to the city every so often. He's got four boys. They never talk, and they couldn't talk. I've read this. Part of their contracts were if they said a line, they would have to get paid. So basically, they're mute. But Briscoe will turn to them and say something like, "You hear that, boys?" And the boys will just stare open mouth. And then Andy Griffith will look at Briscoe and say, "There's a lot in what they say, Mr. Darlin." Something like that. It's pretty funny, I think. I love it. My girlfriend does not enjoy it as much as I do, and that is okay. But it makes me happy to watch it pretty much every day. When Opie becomes the mama bird after the slingshot, that's another really good episode. Ernest T. Bass Goes to School is a really good episode. Once you get into the colorized versions and George Lindsay seems like he's in every scene, those aren't funny at all to me. I don't know what he brought to the show that forced his way into almost every scene, but he's just not a great character. He was good at the beginning when they're black and white, but then too much of them was too much. And that's it. We're going to come back on Thursday to preview the Toronto match on Saturday. Again, I'll be in lovely Canada at BMO Field. To cover that, you can follow me on Twitter at Doug Robertson AJC or on Facebook at Atlanta United News Now. Go ahead and get your questions in for the Toronto match. Go ahead and send me some more things you'd like to see me rank. This week, coming out on Wednesday, AJC.com and hopefully Thursday's paper, I'm going to rank other professional athletes, either who played in Atlanta or are from Atlanta, who would have made great soccer players. I've had a lot of fun with that. Remember to subscribe if you're not a subscriber. That's ajc.com/start. If you do subscribe, drop me an email and I'll read your name on the air. I got a couple of great graduation gifts for my son. Someone recommended a toolbox that he can use for the rest of his life. Another recommended, you know, ask him where he wants to go and take him there for a trip. So I want to thank you all for those suggestions. I want to thank you also for listening to Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Tell your friends. Hug your loved ones. Communicate with your loved ones. Try to be empathetic. Strive for awareness. Y'all take care.
Ocean breeze. Tropical beach. Piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.